Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I would like to welcome you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Just a side word on some upcoming guests in April. I've got Tolek on tomorrow, a guy named Stan Myers on Friday, who'll be talking about the Great Pyramid. Sheldon Neidel on the 12th, a fellow named Sri Ram Ka on the 20th, who will also be talking about the Great Pyramid and something called healing rods. And I'm going to work on filling out the rest of the month, at least during the week. And we'll have time on the weekends for looking at the Meyer material. I wanted to go back over the year 2020 and the possible collapse of the United States. That's in 3 years. And I'm hoping this is the first prophecy that I'm really hoping Billy misses for obvious reasons, because I'm in the United States. And Billy says, when I consider what you already confided to me during the Great Trip in 1975, in 1975, Billy took a trip on the mothership where he went to other star systems with the Pleiaren. And one thing that he really experienced during that trip was during the hyperleaps, when the mothership would travel those vast distances, Billy felt a little bit of what it feels like to be in an eternal state in the creation. And it was just overwhelmingly pleasant. Let's just say that. But let's pick back up here. It says, according to your probability calculations, the superpower of the USA could come to an end after 2020 if nothing in the country changes for the better by then. And in my opinion, and I lean a little to the right, somewhat of a conservative point of view, I think our mainstream media has been completely taken over by foreign powers, probably Saudi Arabia. And I think the whole rhetoric you're hearing about the Russians hacking the election is complete disinformation, and they know it's disinformation. And it's coming out of our Central Intelligence Agency, which means that the CIA is also working for foreign powers. And I think the U.S. is in big trouble. On the other hand, it says here in 1975, you especially raised the enormous contradictions with regard to politics, the economy, the military machinations, the decline of culture. And we're seeing a tremendous decline of culture in the United States. If you listen to certain kinds of music, there's a kind of heavy metal rap now, which I think is absolutely ghastly. And it's actually, I think, dangerous to listen to. There's also a great decline in movies and videos. If you see, it's very hard to get a movie that's even worth watching anymore. And let me continue here. As well as the climbing religion and sectarianism, the serious criminal activity, and even felonies of the former presidents of the USA. Very true. I think almost every president that we've had in my lifetime has been involved in crime, and maybe we have one now who will drain the swamp and straighten things out. But in any case, it says, but in relation to the U.S., gigantic mountain of national debt of now more than $16 trillion is considered, which can no longer be repaid, and the ongoing interest can hardly ever be really paid as well. So there's so much interest on the $16 million, we can barely pay the interest. Just a quick word about Michael Horn and what the Meyer material has to say. A small number of persons are really trying hard to form a good figure group in the USA. There's one in Munns Park that's doing well. I think there's another in New Mexico. There's a couple groups in Ohio here, which ironically I've never had the chance to go to yet, but I'd like to. But in any case, it says here, there are people trying to get a good FIGU group going in the USA. So there are also really good people all over who are trying very hard. And it says here, if I thereby think solely of Michael Horn, who has already worked for so many years for the teaching and the mission, and he and his work cannot be highly enough praised. We had Michael Horn on the show last week. If you haven't caught that show, you might want to check it out. Our solar system has a binary twin. This was also something Billy learned in the great trip on the great mothership, the Great Spacer, in 1975. And it says here, you permitted me to see the dark star, Billy says. In one of our most recent conversations, you again privately indicated something regarding the changes taking place in the Oort cloud. The Oort cloud is like a second asteroid belt in our solar system that's really beyond the major planets. And it says, you said that due to the dark planet floating around out there, changes are taking place which will influence the whole solar system. The Sol system, our system, is a binary star system, and there is a so-called dark star. It's about 10 times smaller than our star, and it has planets orbiting around it. And in 1975, Billy learned about this when he was on the mothership, and the radius of the dark star, the distance roughly, is about a light year. And I think the two orbit around a common center as they're traveling spirally around the arms of the galaxy. They also talk here about a very large chain of meteors, which was catapulted out of the Oort cloud and which found its way into the inner solar system. The first one exploded over India in 2001, and I think since then we've had some explode over Russia. Just a word here, another topic for today's show is the danger of trans fats. And it says here, unfortunately, the Earth human beings are not conscious of that for which they unthinkingly consume these trans fats, thus endangering their health and even their lives. This is a harmful LDL cholesterol, and it causes the hardening of the arteries. And Earth human beings consume far too many great quantities of this. It's found in fast food products, biscuits, pastries, croissants, chicken nuggets, cakes, french fries, croquettes, various chips and burgers, popcorn, various soft curd cheese products, as well as other fatty products, food made of fats, hydrogenated or partially hydrogenated vegetable oil. Contains the trans fats. It's something to look out for. I wonder about chip dip. Anyway, let's move on. I'm covering a lot of kind of somewhat new topics. We've been talking about these topics a little bit in some of the recent shows. Let's talk about Agharta and the blue skin people. It says here, you forget that I was in India and the Himalayas for a very long time, and I also encountered the human beings there, the blue human beings. However, this much may be said, that in the vicinity of Shigatse and Shambhala is the underground realm of Agartha, the capital and the center of distant descendants of extraterrestrials on Earth. I am going to put a link in the chat room of the Google map of Shigatse. Shigatse is a city of the Tibetan Autonomous Region of China, and sometimes called the gateway to Mount Everest. It appears north of India and south of, kind of south of the Tibet a little bit. So let me pop that in the chat room. There you go. If you click that link, you can see the general region of Shigatse, and this somewhere near Shigatse is probably the entrance into this underground realm of Agartha. Let's continue. This is the center of the actual secrets that hold gigantic power in themselves. The city is controlled by the race of the Sons of the Sun, But unfortunately, they have a tendency toward earthly world domination, just like the earthly religions and the secret societies. And my information says here, I may not explain anything else about this openly. Well, there's a little bit of other information in some of the other contact reports. About 11,000 years ago, or excuse me, 11,000 years before the Common Era, Eris, who was the man named Eris the Barbarian, who came here from Beta Centauri, had a son named Eris the Second. And India today at that time was called Aryan, which was named after Eris's son. And they split off from Hyperborea. Hyperborea was in the north, and it was a beautifully warm area. It was very, had palm trees, had the best climate on Earth. And this was before the shift of our axis. There was something different about our structure of our cloud system and our climate. Anyway, had beautiful weather like up at the North Pole. Very bizarre. But after the Atlanteans slammed that, or excuse me, the people of Mu who slammed the great asteroid into the Earth kind of shifted on its axis and our climate changed. The inhabitants of Mu and Agartha, while from Hyperborea, let me continue here. Hyperborea, after a few centuries, after 210 years to be exact, joined with the inhabitants of Mu and Agartha. So there was some interaction between the people from Hyperborea. The Hyperboreans, as you know, if you listen to this show, lived in Mount Shasta in Northern California for quite a while. And you could see their golden-colored ships leaving the eastern slope of the mountain. They were a white-skinned people with blonde hair. About 700 of them lived in a small city embedded within this great mountain some way. And they sometimes would go down into the villages and interact with people on a rare occasion. And they had beam weapons that would sometimes stun the people of Earth that got too close. They had been here on Earth about 180,000 years. But they were originally extraterrestrial peoples, as were these blue-skinned peoples. And Billy has never spoken with the blue-skinned people, although he has seen them during his travels. The blue-skinned people are not associated with the mission. And according to this note I just found out, and I often wondered about that, is the Hyperboreans don't live on Earth anymore. In 1995, there was a great exodus from the Earth. Before then, there were 2,862 extraterrestrials that lived on Earth. There were bases in North America, Asia, and in Switzerland. And the base in Switzerland had been here for 300 years. But they left in 1995. They didn't tell us why. I don't even know if I want to know. The Hyperboreans have now emigrated to the Pleiaren Federation, which, again, is this whole federation that the Pleiaren are involved in. I want to talk a little bit about Adolf Hitler and what's called the Holy See of Rome. And the Holy See is sometimes referred to as the See of Rome, and it's the ecclesial jurisdiction of the Catholic Church in Rome. And there was some relationship between Adolf Hitler and the Holy See. And Billy asked Patah about the Holy See and the Vatican. And I think it was Patah that said there were two popes who got their hands dirty during the time of the Nazi regime. And it was Pope Pius XI from 1922 to 1939 and Pius XII who held office from 39 to 58. And both of these men had actively and consistently caused immense damage to the Jews. Adolf Hitler and his henchmen murdered more than 4.5 million Jews and nearly 3 million criminals and people who were sick in their psyche and consciousness were killed by the Nazi regime. However, both popes also cooperated with Joseph Stalin of the Soviet Union. And Joseph Stalin killed millions of people as well, during World War II. Another interesting point related to the Holy See is that Billy Meyer says the Book of Enoch was the oldest and most important book in the Bible, which was removed and condemned as being heretical by the Holy See. The Holy See has, and I'll read to you the words that are used here. It says, the popes have always stepped up to build up or save the erroneous cult religion of Christianity. That's a huge statement. In this connection, the readers need only think of the Inquisition. The Inquisition, the Spanish Inquisition, was ordered by the Holy See. I think 9 million people were killed during the Holy See. And there was undocumented murders as well, which adds at least a few more million people to that, maybe even as many as another 9 million. So those are some interesting points that we've talked about. We've kind of been brushing over some of these topics. I want to talk a little bit about Lyra Vega and the ancient Lyrians just a little bit. The constellation of Lyra contains the origin of man in our galaxy. At least as far as we know, that 22 million years ago. And here on these ancient planets, now, again, when I talk about Lyra Vega, I'm really talking about a Lyra Vega in a different dimension than ours, a different space-time configuration. The Meyer material says there are seven dimensions, seven different space-time configurations in our universe. And you could think of every one of those space-time configurations as being almost like a different variation of what we see in our space-time configuration. So there's a Lyra Vega in our space-time configuration. There's a Lyra Vega in, my understanding would be, six other space-time configurations. So there are worlds and galaxies and stars and solar systems in these other space-time configurations. In ancient Lyra, the people came to the Earth, and they were according to this link I have, they were ancient. The ancient Lyrans were Titans, standing 20 to 30 feet tall. They were white-skinned with blonde hair and blue eyes. And their lifespan was around 2,000 years. They were a warlike race that had not only developed technically, but were quite advanced in the use of their spiritual power. They moved their warlike forces around the galaxy and used their great power to take control of many thousands of lesser developed races. Over the years, the Lyrian bloodline was mixed with other civilizations, creating many different colors and races that spread throughout our galaxy. The Destroyer Comet existed millions of years ago, and it destroyed many planets in the Lyra Vega system. I'll put this link in, so if you want to look a little bit more at that, you can. Anyway, there's a lot to cover historically. I wanted to go back to the spiritual teachings a little bit, because the greatest practical value there, I think, is found in the spiritual teachings of the Meyer material. And there's a great book. It's called The Might of Thoughts. And in the Might of Thoughts book, there are many different topics that we could cover in order to stabilize our mentality. One of the big challenges of all human beings is to live a balanced life, not to be controlled by your emotions. your real power, your real might is anchored in your thoughts. And when you start to harness the power of your thoughts, you can be the forger of your own fortune. And which something really strange, which I do not understand about this yet, is that even children are included in this statement, that children are the forger of their own fortunes, both the young and the old. He also mentions that pain, suffering, affliction, and disadvantage occur because of lack of understanding related to our thoughts. So our subconscious and unconscious thoughts sometimes bring on grief that we don't understand that we're really bringing it on ourselves. Another thing is that occasionally you will be triggered and your thoughts will run completely out of control and repeat, and you'll have particularly negative thoughts that are actually destroying your psyche. They're destroying your brain because they're creating pathways of negativity in your brain that it's easy to go back to and repeat those really bad thoughts. So the human being is the forger of his or her own fortune. And indeed, in that form, the human being forms his or her luck by means of his own thoughts. So you choose thoughts which bring about your own fortune. And the external circumstances of life, you can take control of, which we find we don't think of us having that ability, but we do. So we must look at never having purely negative or purely positive thoughts, but we need a neutral, positive, equalized thought, just slightly turned towards the positive. Healthy thinking starts then, progressive thinking, if you're neutral positive. If you have negative thinking, if you've been triggered, something's triggered you, and your emotions are leading the way, you can go into the state that's called a sartung in the Meyer material, which is to means to get out of control of the good human nature. So we create our own morality, our own character, our own personality. Your personality comes from the psyche. Your inner attitude comes from the psyche, from the material consciousness. And you are the smith of your own destiny, your own life circumstances. And if you're in a bad environment right now, you have the opportunity and ability to change that bad environment if you focus, and focus first on controlling your thoughts. That's the very beginning. And then once you stabilize your thinking, you can go out and start to strive and set clear goals that are achievable, and go through the things step by step that are making your environment less than the best that it can be. So if you make efforts towards a matter, you will harvest results. And one of the things that you should practice, and even if you've got to say things out loud and repeat them, you can repeat certain parts of the Meyer case. You can repeat certain things. If you're working on a problem, you can speak it out loud in order to clarify your thoughts. And when you do that, they become more valuable, purposive, and productive. If you have strong emotions about something, sometimes speaking that out can help you choose the right words to understand the situation and to understand and then bring your thoughts under control. So everything needs patience. Everything requires practice. If we clarify, we put a great effort, we practice, we have patience, and that can lead to a harmonious life. To clarify means to make a statement or a situation less confused and more clearly comprehensible. So to clear out the uncertainty, the ambiguity, to get rid of the confusion. Because confusion occurs when things blend together. So what you're searching for is clarity in your thinking. Our consciousness is like a garden. If you maintain it with clarity in your thinking, you will not have these wildly growing negative thoughts which cause this confusion. These wildly growing negative thoughts, they're like destructive weeds. And if you stabilize your thinking, you'll find that you'll start striving and doing other things which support the healthy thinking process. People start to become disturbed when their thoughts run out of control and their perceptive ability is limited. And you fall prey to this narrow framework of these negative thoughts, which appear over and over again. And this rotation of thoughts occurs. This negative rotation of thoughts will blur what's called normality as opposed to delusion. And you can literally go into madness over this. So it's very important that you control your thoughts so you're not shaken by the circumstances of your life. You are very powerful. Let me put it that way. The human being thinks, he makes real. So you should nurture good and positive thoughts. And you should have a good opinion of yourself despite some failings that you're aware of. You should always be your own best friend. That's one of the things that's mentioned in the Way to Live book, is that we need to learn to be our own best friend, and we need to learn to live by what's called the true self, the inner self. And let me read something here in Die Art zu Leben, The Way to Live. It says, the inner self is the true personality, the real effective ego of the human being. However, this has nothing to do with the personality which is offered and shown outwardly. Now, we have this false personality, which runs out of control a lot, but we have a true I that's called its identity. The real I is connected to creation. And therefore, in its form, it is also true to creation and directed at effectively being human in the real and true sense. So this is the inner I, the real you, that's related to your spirit form. Now, the false I is the image of our personality, which sometimes is brought outwards a lot. It's very demanding, it's immodest, it's loaded with emotions, and it's this outward personality becomes a factor of grasping for external values. And this personality is delusive, and it always conveys the false I, the false you. So be aware if you're operating under the false I. So, the human being acquiring knowledge by searching for the truth and the knowledge and giving them to him or herself. However, he or she can only give the acquired knowledge and truth to him or herself if he or she is willing to receive it. So, you have to be willing to accept the truth. And the false I, the false ego, is not willing to accept the truth. And it's really interesting. I think people live a whole life dominated by the false I sometimes. And I see sometimes people speaking through the false I, which is very cynical. The false I is very, very cynical. And when people are dominated by the false I, just watch for that, and you may be able to pick that out yourself. Now, we need to nurture neutral, positive thinking. We need to feed and protect, support, encourage good thoughts that you have. People that become a criminal, people that are vengeful, that are haters, they are maintaining these thoughts in their consciousness. Now, even the embryo in the womb is thinking. And there is actually profound thinking and the forming of the personality that goes on in the womb. So from a child, the thoughts there are still in the womb. It's very, very, after the, you know, the sperm fertilizes the egg. After the 21st day, the spirit form comes in and the body is animated. And that child starts thinking. And that child starts to attract what it is. And you are attracting what you are. So that's the thing you have to keep in mind. If there's something really, you know, if things are going bad for you right now, it could be that you subconsciously are attracting these challenges. So keep that in mind. Correct thinking is a monstrous power. And if we, it says in Arahat Athrasada, this comes from that spiritual plane Billy talks about. The correct thinking and knowledge is such a monstrous power that it is able to ceaselessly attract and bring into being everything that the human thinks and longs for. So be careful what you long for. You might get it. And what you get, you may not be ready for. So the human being forms our destiny. And, you know, the Meyer material talks about the universal consciousness, but it doesn't really use the word God. In many ways, you are completely responsible for the circumstances in your life. And if you steer your thoughts wrong, it can lead to inner imprisonment and bad circumstances. If you steer your thoughts correctly, it can lead to inner freedom in good circumstances. And you shouldn't be praying really to God. There is no Heavenly Father in that sense. There is a universal consciousness that your spirit form is connected with. In fact, your spirit form is kind of a fragment of that. So if you have wishes and prayers, these petitions are thoughts that you generate which are fed back out of the consciousness and to one's own inner self. So your inner self, your subconscious, can start to work to fulfill these things. And you literally have the power to create these positive thoughts, circumstances in your life. Now, by the same token, the big struggle with human beings is to not live for stimulation. There are very few stimulations in life that are actually good for you. Most of them create addictions that cause an everlasting cycle, which has no end, that you just rotate around. An addiction is a chronic brain disease that causes compulsive behavior. It can be video games, YouTube videos. And there is a great problem with our media today. The Meyer information talks about this. It might even be in Contact Report 544. I can't remember at the moment, but try to be very careful about spending too much time. I do it myself, and I notice it takes away all my normal ambition and striving if you start watching, for example, too much television or just streaming videos on YouTube. It literally will take away your your sense of striving and your inspiration. No, there is a group in the world that's addicted to world domination. It's called the Secret Dark Order, some of these secret societies. The blue-skinned people that we talked about earlier, called the Sons of the Sun, also have this problem where they are focused on world domination. The Dark Order that Billy talks about is a mighty organization that comes out of our governing class. It's sometimes called the Secret Order of Darkness, and it has its own laws, its own goals. They want the mastery over entire Earth, mastery over humanity. They are trying to attain money and power, and they're spreading hatred. And Zionism is an example of this. Ron Hubbard and certain Christian sects are also an example of this. We have, I think it's infiltrated the U.S. very much, and the mainstream media now is spreading hatred, spreading unrest, and they are trying to get this civil war started. They want to bring down the United States by causing us to hate each other, spread this hatred. Another thing you can become addicted to, you can become addicted to your own desires. And one thing we have to learn is what's called reasonable thinking. Let me read, this is from an article, it's called Praise of Love, Truth, and Wisdom. And I'll throw this in the chat room as well, so you guys can look over this yourself. When one finds the effect of true love, truth, and wisdom, then one recognizes with astonishment that in all their essence and forms, they are very simple. Nevertheless, directly because of this simplicity, the human being does not want to know anything about them, about all their meaning and value, because what is simple, he thinks, is worth nothing and is of no significance and is not precious. True love, truth, and wisdom, so he believes, are only valuable when a high price must be paid in order to acquire them, and when they cannot be grasped nor understood even in their fundamentals and are complicated. And if it is brought home to him, the human, that true love, truth, and wisdom is the most precious of all goods. These are free, and they can be attained simply through the power of clear and reasonable thinking. Then he wonders and asks, how come everything can be attained in such a simple way? Since the teaching of the religions and philosophies and diverse ideologies would indeed show that everything is quite unfathomable, inexplicable in its deepest sense. And the human is so strongly imprisoned and deeply rooted in his erroneous delusion that he rejects the simplicity of true love, truth, and wisdom from the start without conceding it even a tiny chance of still existing. And it is this delusion which also bears the blame for the human seeking the preciousness of true love, truth, and wisdom in completely abstruse, complicated, and involved ways, which are completely foreign to the objects of the search, and which lead to error and confusion. And in this delusion, he is moved in his belief and in the false love, truth, and wisdom, and that he becomes confused by erroneous teaching. So the human loses himself in confusion. And this is one of the biggest problems, I think, today. Really, people, when you get down to it, they're confused. They don't know where to turn. They don't know what to think. The religions, it goes on to say, hammer in worthless things, and so do some of the ideologies, much of which is imaginary. And sometimes people fill themselves with a false joy that's very illogical. Anyway, this is quite a good article, and I think it'd be very good for some additional additional study indeed. The Meyer material is extremely vast, and in some aspects is very simple and very clear. It has a great clarity. And I think that's what Billy is talking about, simplicity in that sense. And when you have clarity in your thinking, it is simple. Now, I mentioned earlier that back in 1995, most of these extraterrestrial groups left the Earth. And they revealed their true identity as the Pleiaren at that point. In these Pleiaren, they live 80 light years beyond our Pleiades in a different space-time configuration. And we've talked about the seven other dimensions in our universe, and that in the dimension of the Pleiaren, inhabited worlds are very close together. So there are many, many more inhabited worlds in their dimension. Between 1975 and 1986, again, there were three extraterrestrial bases on Earth. These included bases in Asia and Switzerland and North America. But there were people during this 11-year period. We had people, extraterrestrials on Earth from the Lyran, the Vegan, the Pleiaren system, and from some neighboring star systems as well. And one of the people I talked about earlier were the Hyperboreans. And the Hyperboreans at one time were located not far from the North Pole. And actually, it was my understanding is Florida was up at the North Pole. The whole Earth had a different shift. And in ancient times, before the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria, about 113,000 years ago, Eris the Barbarian came here from a place called Beta Centauri. And let me talk about Beta Centauri a little bit. Beta Centauri is a long way away. It's about 350 light years. And the term, I believe in Arabic, used for Beta Centauri for that star is called Hadar. And Hadar means to be present, to be civilized, to be on the ground. And why would an ancient people refer to a star using the term that means on the ground unless those people actually came here at one point? Again, the person that came here was a man named Eris the Barbarian. This was 113,000 years ago. He came to this magnificent place at the North Pole at this time. And this is where it was just a beautiful, warm area. Eris the Barbarian is sometimes called Eris the First. And he's talked about in Contact Report 9, Contact Report 70. He's what's called an Ishwish. It means he's a king of wisdom, but he's not a wisdom in terms of the spiritual teachings, but in terms of the power of the material consciousness and the power of science. In Contact 70, he's called an extremely bestial and barbarous person, and that his power was feared very much. And he brought with him to Earth 200 high-grade scientists, which he called sub-leaders. And one of these sub-leaders was a man named Semyasa. And Semyasa fathered the first Adam. There were two ages of Atlantis, and there were two Semyasas, and there were two Adams, and two time periods that were very, very far apart. And I haven't gotten down to the bottom of all that yet. This is an ongoing show and an ongoing research. During this time, in Contact Report 9, it talks about three earthly peoples. And one of them are the ancestors of today, the people from India. And they were fair-skinned people who settled around the Black Sea. And the third were a group of gypsies that were eventually called the Hebrews. And in Contact 70, Eris, let me read what it says here. Through Contact 70 refers to Eris within the context of the three earthly peoples, of which his son Jehave took over his dominion. And he was someone who demanded blood and death from these three enslaved races. So this is really, when you're talking about Eris the Barbarian and Jehave, you're talking about the beginning of the Giza intelligences. And the Giza intelligences eventually ended up far below the Giza Plateau. And they influenced the people of the Earth with a kind of telenotic impulse, which was very hypnotic. Anyway, about 11,500 years ago, we had the destruction of Atlantis and Lemuria. And one of the descendants of Eris, my understanding is, was a man named Jehovan, who took over command of the Hyperboreans and the descendants of the Aryans and the Hebrons. And I talked about the Hyperboreans being for a while within Mount Shasta. And sometimes back in 1995 and before, they would get extraterrestrials visiting them from other worlds. And somehow these Hyperboreans, who had been here for like 180,000 years, were in some way related to the white human race. And from the Hyperboreans came another Ishwish, who gave Henoch his great wisdom. And there was an Ishwish from the Hyperboreans who talked to Noah and told Noah to build the great ark. And Noah, believe it or not, his real name was Noah Codneser. He was about 3 meters and 10 centimeters tall. That makes him over 10 feet tall. And he was commissioned to build the ark about 100,000 years ago, not in the time frame that the Bible says, but much earlier. And this king of wisdom from the Hyperboreans is the one that told him to build the great ark. And let me read what it says here. This was built around 98,400 years earlier, and hence about 100,000 years ago, calculated back from today. And Quetzal said that the ark landed about 100,000 years ago, and not on the peak of Ararat, but somewhere down Ararat. And the events associated with the ark, again, took place about 100,000 years ago. The large four-footed animals could not have climbed down from the peak of Mount Ararat. And the biblical flood did not happen in the time claimed by the Bible. There were multiple floods in the past at different times. And anyway, there was a man named Noah Codneser who was in contact with this extraterrestrial Ishwish, king of wisdom, who was the one who inspired him to build the ark. And there's more information about this in Contact Report 248, which is quite a long contact that took place 1994, actually. And Billy has a very interesting discussion with Ptah. And they talk about a lot of different things. AIDS, they talk about homosexuality, a lot of bizarre, intense information that goes back and forth in this interesting conversation. And eventually they get on the whole story of Noah and the Ark. Here's an interesting little tidbit. And this is Billy speaking, Contact Report 248. It says, at earlier times, I often spoke with Semyase about the Earth people and about people of foreign worlds. The sannyasi also use certain terms for people of the earth and for those of extraterrestrial origin, like also you and Quetzal and all others of your federation. Thus, there was always talk of humanoids and of extra-humanoids and non-humanoids and inhumanoids. In this respect, unfortunately, there are always misunderstandings, which should one day be removed from the world, and let me therefore explain these things in the way I've understood them. Correct me, please, if I make a mistake. Humanoids are Earth humans. Only these are so-called because they are just Earth-born, respectively Earth-created, in accordance with the Latin words of humanus, which means something like terrestrial. The Latin term was already used by the ancient Lyrians. And to be sure, in the same way as on the earth since time immemorial. So the term comes from the ancient Lyrians, who also named their homeworld in the original sense earth, and in consequence of this, they also designated themselves using a word adaptations as earth humans, as humanoids, after which then, in the course of time, the word humanoid was exchanged for the term human, and thus for all human life forms throughout the whole universe. But with the difference that the greatly differently disposed exotic human forms, who didn't exactly resemble the Lyrian humans, respectively the terrestrial humans in their inner and outer anatomies, were called extra humanoids, respectively foreign humans. Consequently, the term humanoid was only used for the kinds of humans or of a more terrestrial, respectively Lyrian nature. Nevertheless, the extra humanoids, respectively so-called extraterrestrials, belong to the genus Omdam and thus are humans. It's just that they are of an exotic nature. Both terms, humanoid and extra humanoid, trace back to the value of Omdam, which means something like first human or simply human. So humanoids are always, and in each case, humans, no matter what exotic appearance and what anatomy they have, and no matter whether they are designed in other ways than as extra humans, humanoids. I often mistakenly refer to these extra humanoids while speaking and writing as non-humanoids, which doesn't correspond to the truth. Of course, because non-humanoids, respectively inhumanoids in reality, non-human life forms, are animalistic, respectively of a fauna-like or flora-like nature, and therefore have nothing to do with human life. The term non-humanoid, respectively inhumanoid, clearly means that such a life form is non-human. In contrast, there are, for example, peoples of ASINA, Asina, extra-humanoids, who deviate in their appearance and their anatomy very exotically from actual humanoids and look accordingly different. As respectively amphibian beings, and are arranged into other living conditions than those of humans, the kind of whom we belong to. But these foreigners are called extra humanoids, not because of their appearance, but simply because they are anatomically different in nature than we are, and we simply designate ourselves as humanoids. There are, for example, many extra humanoids that are outwardly identical and very similar to humanoids, but they are extremely noticeable differences in their internal anatomies. This also testifies to the fact that they are not of terrestrial creation, but are simply beings of alien worlds, which is why they are indeed extra-humanoids. However, their anatomy also contributes to this designation because they are alien to those which are simply called humanoids, respectively humans. However, this should not mislead one to regard and judge the extra humanoids, the foreign humans, as non-humanoids, respectively non-humans. They are humanoids and thus OMDAM humans, O-M-E-D-A-M humans. So extra humanoids are, in every case, always human beings. It's just that they have no direct birth relationship to actual humanoids, the race embodied by the Earth people and your people, speaking of the Plearian people and the people from Lyra Vega. And to address the non-humanoid life forms once again, these are life forms that are not humanoid and thus are in no way of a human nature, that also have no relationship or no connection with the human species. Anyway, this would be a good thing to look at in a little more detail at some future time. And it was interesting to me that planet they talked about is Cena, where there are amphibian humans. Well, boy, we've covered a lot of material today. If you're new to the show, I recommend that you Google Billy Meyer and go to the Billy Meyer Wiki and start reading some of the contact reports. Edward Albert Meyer is an 80-year-old man who lives in Hinterschmidruti, a tiny mountain village in Switzerland. He's written over 40 books. One of the books we talked about today was called The Way to Live. The other we talked about today was called The Might of Thoughts. Do a little research. Look into this. You'll find it the most interesting case by far of extraterrestrial contact. And you'll find that you're learning more from this case than you'll learn by studying pretty much anything else on the Earth, as far as I'm concerned. In any case, thank you for listening. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great day.